Let's talk about the varying degrees of demonic possession. These, an understanding that sometimes it's a full-out possession of the soul, but that there are other types of demonic influences as well.
That's right. There's various ways that, and these are, I would lump these in. There's two categories that the church says that the devil is able to attack people, not just the devil, but demons, etc. One is through extraordinary, and one is ordinary. Now, the ordinary attack of the devil is just temptation. This is probably works for 95% of the people out there. Just simple temptation. You know, we're tempted to do things. We're tempted to turn away from God and to sin. You know, now the church is also careful to say that not every sin is caused by the devil. I mean, many people, when they think about demonic possession, they think, well, it's completely ridiculous because it's just a way to say we're not responsible for our actions. I didn't sin. The devil made me do it, and all that kind of stuff. But that's not true. It doesn't work that way. We're still responsible. We still make the choices. So the ordinary activity is temptation. Now, the extraordinary activity is infestation. Is one level, if you could say that, and that's basically a haunted house. It's like it's sort of the possession of a place or an object, and this is said to happen. It's said to, like, people are said to go to certain parts of the world, buy an object, it's said to have been cursed, or for whatever reason, manifestations are happening in their houses. You know, the doors are opening and closing on their own. They're hearing scratches. Odd things are happening. And this, so would this be an infestation of a place? And usually this doesn't require an exorcism, I was told. It usually just requires that a priest comes and blesses the house, maybe celebrates a mass inside the house, and the problem goes away. The next level would be oppression, which is the physical attacks outside of the body, on the body of a person. So somebody walking down the stairs would be pushed by an unseen force, kicked, pushed out of bed. You know, there's various saints. Padre Pio is one who have had these kind of phenomena happen to them, and it's just like a physical attack outside their body, scratches, these kind of things. The next one would be obsession, which is sort of like an attack on the mind, and this is incessant thoughts that you can't get rid of. And I talked to psychiatrists about this. You know, well, what's the difference between that and schizophrenia and other mental illnesses? And he said, well, basically, it's a perfectly sane person who hasn't had any episodes or problems in their life, and all of a sudden they get this incessant thought that they can't get rid of. They can't push it out of their mind. And it's usually of the nature to profane the sacred. It's usually to attack the sacred, the holy, anything that has to do with God. And then the last one is possession, which is, you know, perhaps the most dramatic demonic possession. Now, it's important to note that these are not stages. It isn't that first comes infestation, then oppression, then obsession, then possession. It doesn't work that way. In fact, you know, some books have written about that in the past, but I asked exorcists if that was the case, and they said, no, it isn't. And interestingly, if somebody is said to be possessed, then they may have these things happening in their house, objects moving around, disappearing, reappearing, doors opening and closing, objects levitating, and it's because of the individual, not because that the house is somehow infested.
So then the possession, then the full-blown possession of a soul, how does this happen? What are the mechanics, according to the exorcists with whom you have spoken and your own studies on this? What is the nuts and bolts of a possession like that? What happens?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a possession of the soul. That's the distinction that the Catholic approach makes. They believe that Catholics believe that the soul isn't possessed. The body is possessed. Christians believe that if somebody has the Holy Spirit that has come down inside of them, it's impossible for them to become possessed in any way. But, you know, the Catholic Church makes that distinction that the soul is okay, but that the body is possessed. So, you know, I think, you know, most people, when they think of demonic possession, there's so much out there and so many different beliefs about it. You know, not even just looking at religion. There's other approaches to this concept of, indwelling of spirits. You know, I think one of the myths that I debunk was this idea that these spirits live inside people. They don't live inside the person because they're a pure spirit. So it isn't like this when somebody said to be possessed that there's this evil spirit, kind of like a dark dot. If you were to do some sort of X-ray on a part of their body, and that's like, okay, there he is. There's the spirit. He's living in your knee or something like that. It doesn't work like that in the Catholic tradition. These are pure spirits, so they don't have physical bodies. They don't occupy space as we do. As Thomas Aquinas says, it's where they act. That's where their presence is. So when the curtain moves or an object moves in the house, the pure spirit is essentially acting on that object, just as he could act on an object across the world at the same time or right a second after, because it's not limited to physical space and time. And for that reason, they're said to be able to possess more than one person at the same time. So I talked to an exorcist, tried to figure out, well, then how would this work? You know, how would a pure spirit be able to do this? And basically, he described it like this, that these entities are connected to people like a pipe, and they're able to send inputs into these people, influence them in some way with thoughts or with voices, and those are things that people often have when they claim to be possessed. Pains in their body, you know, they wake up in the morning, their arm is throbbing, half their body is numb, the next day it's the other half of the body, they have terrible headaches, terrible stomach aches. They go to see several doctors, specialists. They take medicine. Nothing works. The medicines never work. And so these evil spirits are sending inputs, and basically driving these people, these people away from God, into a state of desperation, where ultimately they may do, you know, the ultimate act of desperation, which is to take their own life. So the evil spirits are sending these inputs. Occasionally, they can come through this pipe and enter into the person and influence them in certain ways. But it isn't that the person doesn't have control over their actions.
The person's
in control. But when the evil spirit is said to come through, then the person will lose consciousness. I had one woman say she was telling me that she was at the house having dinner with her husband. They both knew that she had this problem, and he began to say a blessing, and she woke up from her state on the bed, like fighting him off, and he was there panting, like, you know, what, and she was just, what happened? And he said, well, I basically said a blessing over the food, and you went into this trance. And she attacked him, and he finally got this relic, and then this evil spirit left her. Another instance was this woman was watching a TV show, and Pope John Paul II came on, and she began crying. And her husband was next to her, and he comforted her, and he said, you know, don't worry, Pope John Paul II's in heaven, he's watching over us. And she turned to him, and she had this evil look on her face, and he realized that, you know, and she cursed him out, and he realized that it was the evil spirit that had come into her and was crying because he knew that Pope John Paul II was helping her in this particular case. So the idea then is that these evil spirits influence people like through a pipe, but then occasionally they're brought into the person's body. The way this really happens is through the exorcism, and this is a strange concept, but it's the one that exorcists told me, you know, how it really works. Basically, the evil spirit is attached to this person in some way, like at a distance, and then when the ritual begins, when the exorcist begins praying the ritual, the demon then becomes sort of sucked through that pipe, and then he said to enter into the person. But it isn't that he goes into one spot. It's sort of like he kind of penetrates the matter of the person because he's a pure spirit, so he's sort of everywhere. And then the priest prays the ritual, and the demon suffers. And then the demon becomes so weak that they are forced to detach. You know, they come through. They're forced to come through. The ritual hurts the spirit. The spirit detaches itself and becomes weaker after that battle. And then the person is less able to then send those inputs through that pipe. So then the person feels more awake, more in control of their lives. They don't feel the presence of this evil spirit that's influencing them. And so over time, when you keep doing this over time, eventually this evil spirit is said to then be so weak that the person becomes liberated and that they're able to be cast out. And the real mechanism for why that liberation happens is because it's up to the person. The person is praying again, is going back to church,